Shalom Aleichem. The question that we are going to address today is, when in war, is there a concern over collateral damage that will inevitably occur when engaging in war, when shooting missiles, when attacking an enemy? So we're going to address the specific question as it relates to the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces. Does halacha require sacrificing or endangering our own soldiers in order to reduce enemy civilian losses? So when going into Gaza, when shooting at Gaza, when attacking Gaza, do we have to change course to ensure that we limit the losses on the Palestinian side? So we are going to learn some lessons from Sefer Bereishis, and we'll start out with Parshas Bereishis. It's in Bereishis Perek Dalet. This is where we have the first premeditated murder in history. So the pasuk says as follows: Vayomer Kain el Hevel Achiv. So Kain says to his brother Hevel, and they were in the Sadeh, they were out in the field, and Vayakam Kain el Hevel Achiv Yargeu. So the question is, what were they fighting over? Here we have Kain killing Hevel. What was the fight about that led to this murder, this first murder in history? So this is discussed by the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah that says, what were they fighting over? So there are a number of views. We'll go through the first of them, and the second of them. Alma hayu hadini mamurim. So what was going on? What was the fight between them? Amru bovin echalei kaolam. There was a discussion between them. Let's divide up all the land and all the assets of the world. And it turned out that it was a fight over land and assets. So it was over materialism. It was over the assets of the world, ground, land, and the like. So that is approach number one. The second approach in the Medrash says, Rabbi Yeshua desichnin, Nishem Rabbi Levi. So they were both fighting over Zeomer b'tchumi beis hamikdash, nivev zeomer b'tchumi. They were fighting over the beis hamikdash. Each was saying the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built in my area, in the land that I own. So Hevel was making that claim, and Kain was making that claim. And accordingly, the pasuk says, Vayi b'yosem basada, they were out in the field. What's the field? As we see in a pasuk in Micha, Tzion sade techaresh, Tzion zayin, the Beis HaMikdash is a field that was plowed over. So we see when it says, Vayi b'yosem basada, they were out in the field, that's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. So they were fighting over the location of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's two possibilities in these two answers in the Medrash. Number one, they were fighting over land. They were fighting over assets. That's number one. Or they were fighting over the Beis HaMikdash. And apparently, nothing has changed. Apparently, nothing has changed. That fight continues, as Rabbi Beryl Wein said many times over, that reading the Tanakh is like reading today's newspaper. Reading the fight between Kain and Hevel is like reading today's newspaper, what goes on in the land of Israel. But truth be told, something significant has changed since that time. Kain and Hevel, they each had, or they thought they had, equal rights to the Makom HaMikdash, to the land of Eretz Yisrael. However, since that initial fight, and since that initial fight between Kain and Hevel, and the related murder with Kain killing Hevel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided this machlok, is that the ownership of Eretz Yisrael and the Mikdash is going to the Jews. This is, in fact, the first Rashi in Bereishis. The very first Rashi says as follows, a very famous Rashi, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak lo haya tzarich lahaschil es haTorah ela mehachodesh haselachem. Why did the Torah start all the way at the beginning of Bereishis? It could have just started in Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, from hachodesh haselachem, that mitzvah. Why did it start all the way at Bereishis and creation that has nothing to do with halacha? Umatam pasach, but Bereishis, Rashi says, Mishum Koach Ma'asav Higid Le'amo Latet Lahem Nachlas Goyim. It's coming to teach us that the land of Israel was given to Klal Yisrael by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Umas Olam, the non-Jews, are going to come and say in the future, they may come and say to the future, you stole it, Listim Atem, you're thieves, Klal Yisrael, you took it from the non-Jews. And we will be able to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he's making the decisions, and he decided to give it to us. Now, truth be told, and a number of Rabbanim asked this question, but the non-Jews aren't going to give a hoot. They don't care what the Torah says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it's going to go to us. They don't believe in the Torah. So what's going on here? And the answer is that this message is geared not so much to the non-Jews of the world, but it's geared towards us, that we have to know that Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, is ours, given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have to strengthen our resolves especially in times of adversity and difficulty, that we have to know that this is our land, and this is our place, and this is the only place that we have to go. We have nowhere else to go. Continuing with the story of Cain and Hevel, Cain deceived Hevel. He deceived Hevel. He got him out into the field. It says as follows, Vayomer Cain al Hevel achiv, Vayhi biyosam asade. It says, Vayomer Cain says to Hevel, they were out in the field, but it doesn't say what he said to him. So it's the Or HaChaim. It says as follows, Vayomer Cain al Hevel achiv perush, Amar lo davar achva, Mitzad shekada meilav siba asina machmasakina. They weren't getting along. He was jealous, but here he's befriending him. He's befriending him because he wants to fake him out. He doesn't want him to know what's coming. So it's a fraud. It is a fraud. It's deception on behalf of Cain because he knows in a premeditated way he's going to be killing his brother. And that's what happened, unfortunately, with Hamas. We have premeditated fraud, lulling Klal Yisrael into being tranquil and not being on guard. But another big difference that happened, that's the same. The deception of Cain. Cain deceived Hevel, but a difference then is that he did not know how to kill. That's what Rashi says on the Pasuk, Demei Achicha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Cain, the blood of your brother is calling out to me. Rashi says in his second explanation, Davaracha, why does it say the blood in plural tense, Demei Achicha, why doesn't it say Damachecha, Achicha? So Rashi says as follows, Davaracha Sha'asabo Psaim Harbe, that he made many wounds. Cain, in many places, he wounded Hevel. He did not know, Shaloya Yodea Meicha Nafshu Yotze. He didn't know where he's going to be able to kill him. He didn't know where the soul would come out from. He was inexperienced. Deception he was good at, but didn't know how to kill. That's changed. Nowadays, our enemies know how to kill. They do both, deception and murder. I was speaking with a neighbor of ours who was a police officer for a number of decades, and he said when he started out in the Israeli police force, they told him, be careful. What do you have to be worried about? Arabs throwing rocks. And he said things progressed, and then it became knives. And now you have to worry about they're shooting AK-47 combat rifles. Things have changed. They know how to deceive, and they know how to kill. And our question, let's get to our question of the day that was all by way of background, is does the Torah permit us, the IDF, to respond? Does halacha require risking Jewish lives in order to reduce enemy civilian losses? Do we need to worry about collateral damage when we're on a counteroffensive, in defense? We're in defense, but going on a counteroffensive against Hamas. And at this stage, through sorties, going overboard and shooting of missiles and an anticipated ground invasion. Do we have to worry about collateral damage, or can we get out those big bombs? And can we really carpet the place in order to limit the risk that we put our soldiers in? Now, historically, there are those that bring examples when the IDF was very careful about collateral damage. And that's a good thing for political reasons. People are going to scrutinize, and they always scrutinize what Israel does. And if one civilian, one quote-unquote innocent civilian dies, Israel hears it. He hears it tenfold back. But because of that, Israel has been very careful to an extreme, and put its own soldiers at risk. And there are examples that are brought of this in 2002, the terrible, horrific terrorist attacks, and that led to one of the bombings, the Park Hotel in Netanya, where 29 people who were at a Pesach Seder were murdered by a bomber. And the IDF went, and they had to go on and go after the terrorist groups that were responsible. And the focus at that point was the Jenin refugee camp. And Israel had to make the decision, do you bomb and keep your foot soldiers out and not take too many risks with your own soldiers? But the problem is, if you're doing it from the distance, from the air, that there's going to be collateral damage on quote-unquote innocent civilians. And Israel decided that they didn't want to take that chance. They were concerned about collateral damage. And unfortunately, 13 Israeli soldiers were killed in that operation who likely would not have been killed. They would have been spared had the attack been from the air. So that's in 2002. 2006, Hezbollah from the north was pounding Eretz Yisrael with hundreds of rockets, and Israel could have responded by carpet bombing, large bombs, southern Lebanon, and keep the ground forces out. But that wasn't the decision because of the concern of collateral damage. And accordingly, the troops were sent in, and there were more than 100 Israeli soldiers who were killed because of putting the soldiers at risk to avoid collateral damage. So that's our question. Do you need to put your soldiers at risk in order to avoid collateral damage? So where do you look for an answer? So obviously we look in the Torah, and we're going to look in Bereishis, Parshas Vayishlach, it's Perek Lamed Daled, that we have Dinah, the daughter of Yaakov, who was kidnapped and raped by Shechem, as mentioned before. What goes on today, what happens in the Tanakh, is like reading today's newspaper, Nahavdil. So unfortunately, this is exactly what has happened to Klal Yisrael Dutch just now. And it says as follows in the Pasuk, in the Psukim, that Shechem, he took advantage of Dinah, and then he wanted to marry her. So he approaches, has his father approach Yaakov, have a conversation, and no can do. The Shimon and Levi were not buying into this, so they set up a situation that they told the captors, they told Hamor, the father of Shechem, you know, sure, absolutely, we'll move forward with you, we'll intermarry with you, or marry with you. They probably didn't say intermarry. We'll intermarry, we'll marry with you, and it's just one little condition that you have to have bris milah. You get bris milah, all the men have to have a bris, be circumcised, and then we'll be happy to move forward with you. And what happened is, it says in Pasuk Chafei, Vayichi b'yom ha'shlishi, was the third day, the hardest day after having the bris, b'yosem ko'avim, and the people in Shechem, they were having a lot of pain. After that, Vayikushne b'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'Levi, Achedina, what did they do, Shimon and Levi? They took their ammunition, they took their swords, Vayavo ala'ir betach, they came to the city, it was tranquil, Vayahargu kol zachar, and they killed every single male. That's what they did. They took retribution. They weren't so concerned about collateral damage of people who hadn't been involved in the abduction and rape of their sister. They took everyone out. And the Guri Arya asks on that. That's the Maharal. In his commentary on Bereishis, he says, Ach kasha, im Shechem chata kol ha'ir machatu la'arog. If Shechem, he himself sinned, so how about the rest of them? How about all the whole city? Kill Shechem. He's the one who abducted and raped Dinah. Why are all them being killed? And he says something very powerful and very important for answering our question. He says, and I'm not reading the whole thing, but as part of what the Maharal in his Guru Yar says is, Huta lehem lilchom kedin uma shabal lilchom al uma acheres shehitira Torah. When somebody attacks you, he's talking about not when you're going and waging war against somebody who didn't attack you, but when you're taking retribution, it's part of the rules of the game, and the Torah permits it to take retribution against an entire nation. He says, again, his language, Hutalem lilchom kedin uma shabal lilchom al uma acheres. This is part of the rules of war, that you are allowed to take retribution against an entire nation. Hechi da'asu Yisrael davar. If a nation does something to Klal Yisrael, to the nation of Israel, kegon zeshe, partsu behem latzal lahem navala. Like here, in this example, that Shechem did an abomination against Klal Yisrael. They took Dinah, and she was abused. Afal gav delo asa rak echamim. Even if it was only one of that nation, he's only one individual as part of a nation. Kevan demiklal hamau, but because he is part of that nation, he is a member of that nation, even though he's just an individual. Kevan shepartzulam tchila, because they started it, even just an individual who is the aggressor, mutarim likach nikmasamim, you can take retribution against the entire nation. That is what the Maharal says. And he continues, this applies in every single milchama. Even if there weren't many of Minyanim, only some of them were involved in attacking Klal Yisrael. It doesn't matter. We don't distinguish. Because you're part of that nation that did evil to Klal Yisrael, mutarim lavo aleihem limilcham, it's permitted to go to war against them. V'cheinhem kol halmilchamos. And this is the manner in which war is waged. This applies to all wars. And the bottom line, accordingly, is that the Maharal is justifying the actions of Shimon and Levi. Once you respond, once Klal Yisrael responds, you are permitted to go the entire way against the entire nation, because this is the way that war is waged. Now that's the Maharal. And a number of more contemporary poskim have discussed this. And Rav Asher Weiss, he discusses it in his Minchas Asher and in a Sefer Devarim. But he does qualify a little bit. He says that the Maharal does not sanction just going to war on civilian members of an enemy. You can't just go that. That's not what. He permits them only when you are executing on your battle plan, a necessary battle plan, and that's the way that you have to accomplish your goal. There aren't other ways. That's the way you have a goal to accomplish. Then accomplish your goal, and you don't have to be concerned about collateral damage of non-combatants. But it doesn't mean that you can be in nefarious ways going anytime you have an enemy that you can go kill anyone. Obviously, that's not the situation here. Here we have a battle plan against Hamas, and it has to be executed on, and we're discussing, do we have to change our battle plan in order to worry about collateral damage? And here we see, based on this Maharal, absolutely not a problem. Execute on your plan and don't worry about the collateral damage. And in fact, the number of postgame, contemporary postgame, relying on this Maharal, this Maharal's understanding of the Shechem, what happened in Shechem, to allow, to permit, to matir, harming anyone who belongs to an enemy during wartime. You're part of the enemy, and we have to execute on a plan. We don't have to worry about collateral damage. And the poskim that paskin that way, Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Herschel Schachter, Rav Yaakov Ariel, Rav Dov Lior, they all rely on this Maharal. And in fact, I saw an article on this that Rav Schachter argues that Israel acted immorally by risking its soldiers in Jenin, as we talked about before, 2002, and Lebanon, 2006, in order to reduce Arab civilian casualties. You're not allowed to put your soldiers into harm's way, to risk harms to your soldiers in order to save enemy non-combatants. You can't do that. You need to execute on your plan and not put your own soldiers into risk. And Rav Bleich concurs with Rav Schachter, it is forbidden to risk Israeli lives in order to save Arab civilians. In fact, this was a question that was asked to Rav Avram Shapiro when he was the Rav HaRashi of Israel and during one of the wars in Israel. Then he was asked, do you have to worry about collateral damage when it comes to being in war? And he responded as follows, Kol od ein sakana mamashit l'chayaleinu, as long as there is not danger to our soldiers, ein heter lifkoa benefesh v'aflo beruchus, you cannot cause damage, you cannot harm any individual, a non-combatant, combatant you're fighting against, but non-combatant or their property. If there's no reason, if it's not causing us any harm, it's not putting a soldier in danger. However, ulam kasher sakana hi muchashit. However, when there's sakana, it's a tangible sakana. If there's a risk, harishiyish liskor sha'al kafa moznaim ein omeret rak hayechida lochemet. You have to remember that we're not only balancing the specific soldiers that are going to fight versus the non-combatants of the enemy. That's not the only thing that you have to look at. This number of people, for this number of people, we're risking this many Israeli soldiers versus this many enemy soldiers. Ibuda shel yechida achas, o chelik mimena, if you lose a part of your soldiers, a small part of it, you lose just this group of soldiers, this unit, or even a small part of it, that can have a negative deleterious impact on the entire war. It can negatively impact the motivation of the rest of the soldiers. There's much more cosmic issues going on here when you put your specific soldiers into harm's way. It's not only about them, it's about everyone. Alken kasher nidrash, the kasher sakana glula ya'ayin, when it's necessary and when the sakana is obvious, in makom limdor et mispar chayalim shalim, you're not simply going to look at how many chayalim, Israeli chayalim do we have, soldiers do we have, versus how many may get hurt of them. That's not the calculus. That's not the analysis. That's not what's going on. There's a halacha brua. It's clear in the Rambam. That's not how you analyze it. V'chayavim lahatzil et chayav shel kol chayal yud. You have to worry and be concerned about the life of each and every Jewish soldier. And accordingly, that's our calculus. Just like the Maharal said, if to put a Jewish soldier in danger, absolutely unacceptable. We don't have to be concerned then about collateral damage. I do want to also quote from Alan Dershowitz, Professor Alan Dershowitz from Harvard Law School. He's retired from Harvard Law School. In his book, The Case for Israel, he says as follows, I'm going to quote, although collective punishment is prohibited by international law, It is widely practiced throughout the world, including the most democratic and liberally-minded countries. Indeed, no system of international deterrence can be effective without some reliance on collective punishment. Every time one nation retaliates against another, it collectively punishes citizens of that country. This is the war. This is how war is waged. This is the Maharal. The American and British bombings of German cities punished the residents of those cities. The atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki killed thousands of innocents, actually hundreds of thousands of innocent Japanese for the crimes of their leaders. The bombing of military targets inevitably kills civilians. So that seems to be the bottom line here, that if there's no reason to put an enemy non-combatant into danger, okay, it's not going to cause you any risk. But if it does cause you any risk, and it does, it very much does, if you're talking about a difference in strategy between carpet bombing from the distance and going in, then you don't worry about collateral damage. You're not allowed to worry about collateral damage. You have to worry about the safety of your own troops. I just don't want to get me inyan leinan, but also inyan, that let's talk about Lahavdil, the Jewish victims of the Hamas barbarism. And they're talking about, Rahman al-Islam, what happened to Klal Yisrael, the numbers. 1,300 Jews, I don't know the exact number, unfortunately it keeps going up, murdered, and X many injured, and 100, 130, 150 abducted to Gaza. And this is a tragedy. It is an absolute tragedy. However, I want to refer to a pasuk in order to build this out a little bit more. There's a pasuk in Vayera that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's right after the Akedas Yitzchak, right then after the Akedas Yitzchak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram, Ki varech avarechecha, I'm going to give you a bracha, v'harbe arbe zarecha, and you're going to be a lot. We're going to Klal Yisrael will be fruitful and multiply like two things, Ki chochvei hashamayim, Ukachol asha asfas hayam. Like two things, like the stars in the heaven and like the sand of the sea. And these are two metaphors to Klal Yisrael, and they represent very different things. The sand on the sea represents tzibur. That represents the klal of Klal Yisrael. That represents the congregation, everyone, not yechidim, not individuals. You can't have a grain of salt of sand alone. You need all the other grains together, and that creates a tzibur. That's the chol ayam, the tzibur. On the other hand, this parallel, this metaphor to kochvei hashamayim, to be like the stars of the heaven, this is very different. This is not referring to the klal Yisrael, but this is referring to the individuals, each and every individual, as we say in Tehillim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mone mispar lakochavim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts the number of stars, lechulam shemas yikra, and each and every one of them, he gives a name. Each one is different. Each one is different. They represent different. Each is an individual, and each one is unique. Each one has a name. Each one has capabilities. And this represents Klal Yisrael in a very different way. And it would say as follows, when it comes to the attack of Hamas, and when we see the numbers, the tragic numbers of those who sustained injuries and were murdered from Hamas, when we talk about the Chol Hayam, the Tzibur, this is an attack against all of Klal Yisrael, an attack against all of us as a Tzibur, as a congregation. But when we look at these numbers, something else is going on. We can't look at it as a Klal. 1,300 Israelis, over 1,300 Israelis murdered, this many, 4,000 injured, 130 abducted. Each of those is an individual. Each of those is kochvei hashamayim. Each of them is mone mispar lakochavim lechulam shemas yikra. Each of them has a name. Each of them is unique. Each of them had family members. Each had relatives, maybe parents, maybe a spouse, maybe children, maybe friends. Each had huge potential in his or her life. So when we look at these numbers, we can't look at it as a klal. Not only as a klal, look at it as a klal, but we have to think each of those was a unique individual, a special individual with a name and a personality and had a life. And as HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Cain after he killed Hevel, Vayomer Me'asisa, what'd you do? Kol demei achicha tzo'akim elai. The blood of your brother is shouting out to me. Rashi, in his first explanation, why does it say demei in plural tense? Demei achicha. Damo, it's not only his dam. Why is it in plural tense? It's his blood, and it's the blood of his future descendants that weren't able to come because you murdered him. A terrible thing that you murdered them. And this is the numbers of the klal. These are huge numbers, but we have to know that each of them, this number of 1,300 murdered Israelis, plus more than that, murdered Jews, that's Kochvei HaShemayim. It's not only Chol Hayam, the Tzibur, but each was individual, each was a unique. And that Dam is shouting out. It's not Kol Dam that is shouting out, but Kol Demei. Hamas murdered not only these individuals, these Kochvei HaShemayim, but all future descendants. And it's that Dam, Kol Demei Achicha. This is the blood of our brothers that is shouting out right now. Certainly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us a big onesh. It just doesn't happen, something like this. It's all planned from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We had it coming to us. Why? We don't know. We're not Nevi'im. But I would forecast to say there was a lot of fighting in Klal Yisrael. Hashem had enough. Hashem had enough. Too much fighting. You need Achdus. Or the values of Klal Yisrael. Where have they gone? That it's illegal to put up a mechitza in a public area in Tel Aviv to have a davening on Yom Kippur. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, enough, dayenu. We've had enough of that. And Emir Tzashem, the Achdus that we see today, should continue in Eretz Yisrael. There were 1,500 people waiting to donate blood at one location alone. Hours, waiting hours in order to donate. And we have children selling cotton candy and other junk food. And what do you have to pay for it? You have to say Tehillim. That's what they're charging. You have people at airports that are paying for Israelis to get back so they can fight in the army. We have barbecues going on outside army bases. 25,000 steaks, 50,000 steaks being made for the Chayalim. Amazing. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Let's not go back in the other direction. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, this Achdus. So we should all make our best efforts in davening. Just want to refer to a Rambam in Hilchos Matnos Anim. He says, when it comes to the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim, Ein lecha mitzvah gedola kepidyon shvuyim. There's no greater mitzvah than redeeming captives. Shashavui hareyu bichlal hareivim. Why? Because there's so many aspects of pikuach nefesh as it relates to somebody who's in captivity. They're starving. They're hungry. Vatzmeim, the thirsty. Va'arumim. They're undressed. They don't have clothing. And they're in a constant vome basakanas nefashos. That's what's going on right now. 100, 150 Jews. Tremendous pikuach nefesh. What can we do, Davin? What can we do? We can learn. What can we do? Look for opportunities to help others. And I think critical also, maybe more important, no, we won't say more important, but absolutely critical is being nice to others. And especially if you're in Eretz Yisrael, it means if you see a chayal, if you see a soldier, say thank you to him. Say thank you to him. It means the world to a chayal when you simply say Todah Rabbah. And Emir Tzashem, with our proper davening and learning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be mochel us and take us out of this tragic situation that we are currently in. Thanks so much for listening.